MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. Sign up using our link and receive a $500 risk-free bet. That's right, $500. And if you send in your first bet slip, you'll get a free t-shirt. So head on over to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/win for a $500 risk-free bet. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WYNN. We're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is the home for the avid sports bettor, providing insights, analysis, and free betting picks. Better Than Vegas, it's like YouTube for sports betting. Make sure to subscribe to our page so you don't miss a pick at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And we're also brought to you by Better Edge. Better Edge is a stock exchange for sports bets, allowing you to buy and sell betting positions like it's a stock market. The best part is it allows you to bet with no VIG. That's right, no VIG betting that's legal in 40 states. Sign up at betteredge.com, promo code SGP for a free $10 bet. That's BETTOREDGE.com, promo code SGP. And finally, we're brought to you by Ace Per Head. Ace is the leader in pay-per-head providers, and they make it super easy to start your own sportsbook. Plus, Ace is offering up to 6 weeks free over at aceperhead.com/SGP. That's aceperhead.com/SGP.
Hello, DeGens. Welcome. Welcome back, or welcome for the first time, to the MMA Gambling Podcast and the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. If you are in the market for horrible fight picks, mediocre banter, and bad dad jokes, then you're home. Welcome home. And if you're also in the market for someone laughing on mic before I even introduce them into the show, then you're definitely home. I don't know if I introduced myself yet. I'm Jeff Fox. I'm the host every week. You may be sick of hearing my voice this past week because there's been a lot of me. We did two podcasts last week. I was on the main sports gambling podcast show. I had two videos on BetterThan.Vegas. It's been too much, far too much of me this past week. So, but we're back to you once again on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. I also write and edit for the site Sports Gambling podcast.com, and I run MMA-manifesto.com, which is getting a lot of traffic right now after the Conor McGregor Dustin Poirier fight, mostly because I have all the fighter payouts and purses, and people seem to care how much other people make. So make sure you check that out. Over there you can also read some articles from my co-pilot here, my right-hand man there. It's his name. Actually, I won't tell you his name yet. I'll also tell you he hosts Top Turtle Podcast, which is another very good MMA podcast, probably the second best podcast out there. And he also writes Prelim Picker, which is probably tied for the second best MMA podcast out there. He likes to giggle before I introduce him every week. He is a purple belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. He's a white belt in picking fight winners. Daniel Gumby-Vreeland.
I am very much those things, especially the white belt in picking fight winners. I did want to share this right off the top, though, because I was looking for, like, where am I going wrong? How do I possibly have these picks so terrible week after week after week? And again, I'm doing pretty okay on the prelims, I would like to point out. The prelims are always seem to be good. It's the main card that seems to be going bad. So I was looking for something on the main card. Remember we talked before about roughly how many dogs win. What was the percentage, did you say, last year? We talked about in 2020.
Yeah. And I haven't done this past weekend's yet, but it was right around – it's actually gone down a bit. It's at 32% right now, I think.
32%, right?
Yeah.
So 32%.
It's about a third, yeah.
So about a third, little under a third, right? 32%. Do you have any idea what the percentage of underdogs winning on the main card is for 2021 in the UFC?
No, I should track that. That's a good.
It's
59%. There you go.
59% of the underdogs so far have won, including a majority on every single card. So, like, I'm looking for things that are going wrong. And granted, you know, like, I'm picking some dogs that aren't winning and some favorites who are getting upset. But, like, That is a percentage that I don't think we can expect to stay up, right? Every single card, more underdogs have won than the favorites on the main card. Like, what could be the reasoning behind that other than like a weird fluke?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. What could the reason for that be? Is it the lines are off? Is it people are hammering like the batters are hammering familiar names like
I think
Conor
this past
McGregor?
yeah, I think this past weekend it was a little bit of that hype stuff, right? Because you have Connor and we talked about the fact that, you know, we both picked Connor to win, but like we both knew that that line was wrong, right? Like that line, nobody's betting Connor at negative 300 and feeling real great about it at the end of the day, and they're probably feeling worse about it right now. But you could say the same thing about Amanda Ribas, like, right? She was, you know, on every single YouTube video that, you know, a little clip of her saying something hilarious in her hilarious voice. But like, you know, the UFC clearly had their hype machine behind her too, and her odds were damn near negative 300. And I even think we talked about that seemed a little inflated for her. And then you have, you know, the other underdog who won too, if we're just gonna encapsulate all three of them here. Was Michael Chandler, who's like it's a weird situation, right? Like we haven't really seen him against any top flight competition with the exception of Pitbull, and Pitbull knocked him out in, you know, a round. So
Right.
you know, that could be fluky, that could be something else. But then we watched him, what, knock out Sydney Outlaw in the past his prime Benson Henderson? Like, I don't really know what to make of that. So yeah, it was this past weekend, weird stuff like that, but the other ones are just, I mean, I have no idea what to say about, you know, Alessio Dechirico beating Joaquin Buckley. Like, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Before we'll break down the last two fights on this last two cards, excuse me, on this past week's Fight Island. But first, let's get you a breakdown of our where we stand for the year. Unfortunately, I'm 16 and 18. Dan is 12 and 22. So I can always count on Dan to make me look better than I should be. And we're obviously down lots of money. Probably, even though we do claim that true degenerates do bet at least $100 in every fight. Probably your best move, I'm sure most of you realize your best move is not to bet every single fight on a fight card. There we're giving you picks and you can decide which ones you agree with or which ones the line is a decent number for you. So you're blaming underdogs being fluky. I'm blaming the fact that we actually pick every fight on the card, and some of those lines are quite unadvantageous to say the least for us. So that's my excuse.
Yeah, I like that excuse too. And I would say, but I would say though that like some of the ones we're hitting too are probably ones I wouldn't have bet in the long run. You know, like I
Yeah, that's
wouldn't,
true.
yeah, I wouldn't have bet that Amir Albazi's Zalgazoumagulov fight because I mean like that was razor close and we crushed it.
Very true, very true. Okay, before we break down the fights, let me tell you about a sponsor, one of our newer ones. They're still around. We haven't scared off yet. WynnBET, they're offering a $500 risk-free bet, which is what you need if you're betting our fights, you betting our suggestions here. You definitely need some risk-free money there. And make sure you send in your first WynnBET screenshot to podcast@sportsgamblingpodcast.com, and you'll get a free T-shirt. They have tons of boosted bets. They include a wheel spin to boost parlays, which is perfect for hashtag degens only. WynnBET is currently online in New Jersey, Colorado, Michigan, and hopefully many more states on the way. If WynnBET currently isn't active in your state, you can still get a free T-shirt if you refer a friend to the site. So make sure you go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/win. That's WYNN. It's spelled win as in win casinos. So that's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/win. All right, let's maybe we should go do this in chronological order and go over, even though it seems like eons ago now. The Wednesday, I want to say night, but it was Wednesday 9 in the morning card. If you're on the East Coast, UFC on ESPN, Chiesa versus Magny, another card that we did very poor on. Let me see what I was in that one. I was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I had 7 losses, so I had 1, 2, 3. I think it was 7 and 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, I was 7 and 7 or something like that. I was around 500. Dan was far worse, of course. Dan got 1, 2, 4, 5 fights correct. In the main event, we both whiffed on that one. We actually both whiffed on the top three fights in the night. So that goes into your saying that unexpected people are winning at the top of the cards, at least for 2021. Michael Chiesa totally smothered Neil Magny. I think you were in agreement that Magny's rest is going to be good enough to keep Chiesa off him, and that definitely was not the case.
Yeah, it was weird to me, too, that, like, so for me, I thought for sure that Magny would use his jab, and when Chiesa got a little too aggressive, Magny might shoot a takedown, right? Like, or if he got on the inside, Magny might wind up on top, and I thought Chiesa's path to victory was looking for scrambles, looking for guillotines, you know, working to the back if he did come on top of a scramble, but he was the one with the aggression in the wrestling, which was almost a little bit surprising to me that, first of all, that was his game plan all along, and second of all, that it worked so flawlessly, right? Like, because, I mean, like, I guess I just don't think of Neil Magny as being that type of wrestler, and it almost begs the question for me, is he that type of wrestler at welterweight? Because we saw him at lightweight. Maybe he was just grappling tired him out so much down there, and he wasn't bad at lightweight, but just, like, not the offensive wrestling threat that he is here at welterweight. And it certainly makes, I mean, he calls out Colby Covington there. It certainly makes that Colby Covington fight really intriguing.
Yep. Without question. So do you, he's undefeated at welterweight. This is his fourth fight, I believe, at 170?
Yeah, he's fought four times at 170. And it's also, it's worth noting, it's not like those four names are slouches either, right? Like, it's Carlos Condit, which, by the way, that win in retrospect looks even better, right? Like, because Condit doesn't look like the spent Carlos Condit we all thought he was.
Yep.
Diego Sanchez, which looks like a win over Diego Sanchez. Then Rafael Dos Anjos and Neil Magny. Like, that is not an easy four either.
No. So it looks like he may actually be the real deal at welterweight. Could you see a title challenge for him in the future?
I mean, like, the toughest part about welterweight right now, and this is, it's ridiculous to say this, the toughest part about getting a title shot at welterweight is just getting the fight that gets you the title shot. Because we're seeing it right now with Leon Edwards, right? Like, that dude has put together a massive winning streak. The only loss he has in recent memory is to the champ. He's beaten everybody else they put in front of him. But the people they keep putting in front of him are people who keep not leading him to a title shot. And now he's fighting, you know, like an unranked contender in Khamzat Chimaev, who's fought once in the division. So, like, they continue to give him people who are not suited to get him that title shot. I mean, in you could say the same thing about a whole bunch of other fighters. And then you got guys like Gilbert Burns who just step in on short notice and take all those opportunities. So Chiesa could do that, like Burns, because he is a guy who's, like, always ready. You know, he's not doing a massive weight cut anymore. He is kind of that anytime, any place sort of dude. But, like, the middle or the welterweight division, rather, is just such a tough division to forecast for that reason, right? Like, Colby's not going to take fights that he doesn't think make him look like the greatest in the world. You know, Jorge Masvidal can take whatever money fight he wants. You know, Nate Diaz disappeared. Like, you know, Conor McGregor could reappear in that division now for all we know. Like, you know, there's obviously, like, a whole bunch of weirdness at welterweight. So do I think it's possible? Yes. Do I think it's probable? Probably not.
And then once, if he does get himself up to a title shot, then more than likely waiting for him is a bigger, stronger, more explosive wrestler in champion Kamaru Usman. So there's no clear path to actually winning the title once, if he actually does get a title shot either.
Yeah, although I would say, you know, and I've said this before, I'm big on Gilbert Burns. I think Gilbert Burns stands probably one of the better chances here to beat Usman. Burns is probably an easier path to victory for Chiesa than he would have against Usman, because not that Burns' grappling isn't phenomenal or his hands aren't as good or anything like that, but he's less of an offensive wrestling threat to fight Chiesa. Like, the wrestling would probably be a little bit closer and maybe even tilt towards Chiesa. So it would be interesting at least in that way. But again, you know, by the time he gets to the top of the title picture, I mean, who knows? It could be Wonder Boy sitting there.
Yep. Yeah, you never know. It's true. That was pretty much the only real, at least in top of the division level, significant fight on that fight night card. Orly Albaz looked fantastic in his return in welterweight, and we got that fight wrong. He beat Munir Lazez. Ike Villanueva finally got a win. He knocked out Vinicius Moreira. We got that one wrong. Moreira looked horrible in that fight.
Yeah, it also, you know, and I will say this about that one too, because that was an underdog we unsuccessfully picked. We said Ike Villanueva, like, notoriously not real great at jiu-jitsu.
Yep.
Submission losses out the wazoo on his record.
Yep.
Vinicius Moreira only seems to win by submission.
Right.
Has if I'm not mistaken, a brown belt in jiu-jitsu, maybe a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I could have it wrong. He's good at jiu-jitsu. Attempted no takedowns and went in, I'm pretty sure, trying to block punches with his face. And that was his game plan. Like, what a miserable... Like, and it wasn't like it was quick either. It's not like you can be like, oh, well, he was only in there for 2 minutes. Like, he didn't have time to shoot the takedown or he was setting it up. He was in there for 6 minutes and he didn't ever look once like he was thinking about maybe grappling a guy who's not great at defensive grappling.
He's and for the record, he's a black belt. I just looked it up. So yeah, even worse. and he looked just like a fish out of water on the feet. He was didn't want to get hit. Didn't look like he knew how to strike. Yeah, he definitely did not look UFC caliber, which he probably won't be for much longer because that's 4 straight losses for him. So I would expect him to be getting his walking papers, unfortunately, and maybe he can work on his striking after that. We did hit on a. We both hit it on a couple underdogs, and that we may as well brag about what we got. I got Matt Schnell right at +118 over Tyson Nam. You got that one wrong, haha. And then you got Omari Akhmadov +138 over Tom Breeze.
Yeah, he looked great too.
He did.
That was one of my shining stars of that card because, like, you know, he's a guy who's right on the edge of the top 15. He's had good fights with, you know, a lot of great fighters in that division too, and you know. Tom Breeze was a dangerous fight for him to take because it basically would have been a huge step back for him to lose to Breeze. So that's a big one for him.
Right, exactly. Not much else to talk about it because we both obviously did horrible on that card because that's our trend now. We do horrible on every night's card. So that's just the way it is. But you're not here for winning fight picks. You're here for the entertainment we provide, of course, for free, mind you. And one of the reasons why we are free is because we have so many lovely sponsors. What a segue that is. Better Than .Vegas would be one of the sponsors. I mentioned Better Than .Vegas earlier today already. If you don't know, if you're not familiar with it, it's like YouTube, but for what hashtag the gens only care about, which would be sports betting. Best part is if you go on there, you can get free video picks from the Sports Gambling Podcast Network crew. I had two up last week. Wearing an awesome, ravishing Rick Rude t-shirt in one of them. So you're missing out if you didn't see that. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out to our SGPN channel. That would be sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. Then you won't miss any of the videos. There's pretty much we have daily. We have at least one video up with either NBA, NFL, UFC, whatever happens to be going on in that vicinity of when the video goes up. So make sure you check all those out. And once again, that's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. Subscribe to our page and enjoy watching us give you bad picks. So, all right. So let's talk about this past weekend, the big UFC 257, which apparently I'm in Canada, so it didn't affect me, but apparently a lot of people in the States were not able to access that on the pay-per-view. Apparently, I guess too many people were trying to order it maybe on ESPN Plus, and it was not letting a lot of people in until well into the show, apparently. Do you have any issues at all, Dan?
I did not, and as a matter of fact, I was like watching the pre-fight show, and I just, you know, flipping through Twitter on my phone just because, you know, I'm waiting for them to stop talking about the fights and just get to the fights, and I was like, is it, you know, usually you see one or two people being like, damn, Fight Pass is buffering. And I'm like, you just have bad Wi-Fi. Like, you know, that's what I want to tell people all the time. You just have bad Wi-Fi. Wait for it to come back. And then, but then I saw, like, it was a lot of people and it was like some fighters. And I was like, huh, my stream's great.
Yeah, and it's the joke going around is Dana White was leading up to this was threatening they're gonna shut down all illegal streamers and stuff and of the event and they accidentally shut down ESPN Plus instead.
That was the illegal streamer, apparently.
Yes, apparently. So anyhow, the whether you saw it or not, the biggest card of the year up to this point actually did happen. It did go off, and we did get the main event right. It did end fairly early. We said it'd end in the first couple rounds, and it did end via knockout. So we nailed it, right, Dan?
No, we didn't. It's
we nailed part of it.
We nailed the. I think actually I said second round knockout too.
There you go.
If we're talking, we just need to switch the names around a little bit.
Yeah.
What's weird to me is in this fight, because you know we picked Connor. We thought he was gonna come out counter and look like his old self. Did it seem like he was, I don't know, more stationary than he usually is? Like, his, like, you know, he seemed heavier on his feet and more, almost like he was fighting a Thai style than he was his normal, like, jumpy boxing in and out.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, yeah. Now that you mention it, yeah. There's a reason for it later on in the fight. But, yes, right out the gate. Especially if you watch the first fight between them. Not only is he heavier on his feet, he's obviously heavier also. He's put on a lot of weight because it's a higher weight class. But yeah, he definitely he didn't look bad by any means. He definitely won the first round, and he was doing those shoulder strikes, which he likes to do now in the clinch. But yeah, he definitely wasn't this dynamic, all over the place, you don't know what's coming next type of fighter that he was in his heyday.
And that's kind of what gave us confidence in him in the first place, right? Is I said, you know, if Poirier tries to overwhelm him with volume, he moves too much, he counters too well,
right.
He's hard to hit with all of that volume, and he wasn't. Like, he being more stationary almost played right into the hand of the type of fight that Poirier wants. And like you said, there was some reason for it later on in the fight after, you know, his leg had been kicked pretty badly and he couldn't be mobile. But it didn't seem like he wanted to from the get-go, and I don't know if that was a stylistic choice or, you know, if Poirier was doing something to encourage that, but it was, I think, ultimately his downfall.
Yeah, it looked like it was going to work. I expected him to win the fight right up to the moment that he didn't win. Basically, he other than that, obviously, he looked fine. He was basically, Poirier also looked fine as well, but McGregor seemed to be doing whatever he wanted, but Poirier did come out with a great game plan. He made Connor work right off the bat, got a quick takedown, quick being like McGregor wasn't on the ground for very long, but he made him work there, and then he just destroyed his lead leg, which is a good plan when you're going up against a striker like that. Destroy their legs so they can't plant and deliver the knockout blow. So he did a couple things, I think, which protected him later on in the fight. He wore McGregor down by making him wrestle and grapple, and then he wore his leg up.
Yeah, and it's again a masterful game plan, which you come to expect from somebody like Dustin Poirier, and especially being coached by Mike Brown. Not that to knock John Kavanaugh, because he obviously knows what he's doing, but I know Connor did some training elsewhere, so it almost begs the question of whether or not he's one of those fighters who, like, you know, found a new tool and thinks it's the right way and has kind of gotten away from what it works for him. But I'll ask you this. You know, you said you think he looked great in there and you think he looked like he was going to win up until he didn't win. What does he do next now?
Yeah, that's exactly the question. What does he do? Fight Manny Pacquiao probably in a boxing match is what he does next to make everyone forget about him losing in MMA. He took the loss like he always does. He's a gracious loser when he does lose. This was his first time he's ever been stopped via strikes. All his past four losses were all via submission. So whether that's like sometimes a fighter getting TKO'd or KO'd, that does them in for good. That either mentally or physically, it destroys their chin and they can't take a punch anymore. So that's another thing you have to worry about. Hopefully he sticks around in MMA because he's good for business. But yeah, I would guess he goes to boxing next.
But here's my question about that, right? Like, the appeal for him at boxing was always that they could sell him as the best boxer in MMA, right? And whether or not you believe that or not is totally immaterial, because that's what they were selling it as, because all of his losses were by submission. Now that he's been knocked silly on his feet by another guy his size in his sport, is that option even there anymore? Because I don't know that it is. Like, I don't know that you could put him in a boxing match with Manny Pacquiao and have it sell like hotcakes anymore now that he's been TKO'd on his feet.
He can box Jake Paul. And they can. it's a joke, but it's also not a joke, because that's the world we live in boxing. Celebrity boxing is a thing. He still has the big enough name that he can basically do whatever he wants next. But one thing he can't do, hopefully, and which is I'm thankful that he lost for this reason, is we are not going to have to hear about him versus Khabib anymore, hopefully. They were really, him and Dana were really overboard in trying to get Khabib to fight him again, acting like the first fight was competitive and they have to have a rematch, when basically he got destroyed in the first fight. He won a round, so yippee for him, but he tapped out to a neck crank. So
do you think that this is a possibility to get a Poirier rematch, though, because with Khabib? Because I actually think he was far more competitive against Khabib than literally anybody else, right?
Yeah, it sounds like Khabib is not interested, which was the case all along, and Dana being a carny and trying to make him say that there's a chance, because he said if something exciting or intriguing happens this past weekend, that he may come back out. Well, Dustin Poirier knocked out Conor McGregor for the very first time ever, and Michael Chandler also won via quick knockout. So that's you couldn't get two outcomes more intriguing or exciting than that, if that really was the case.
Yeah, right. And it sort of shows you that basically what Dana was saying is, not if something exciting happens in the lightweight division, it was if Conor McGregor does something exciting.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
And we said it all along, even if Conor did, the likelihood was low. You know, I originally said that, like, Chandler probably had the best chance, but even looking as good as Chandler did, Poirier doing that right afterwards, to me, made it be like, oh yeah, Khabib's not coming back.
Yep, exactly. And Khabib's quote was, or to paraphrase, was he said to Dana, you know, I'm on a different level than all these guys, be honest. So, which is true. It's not bragging, but it's true. He's beaten the guy who just beat Conor McGregor, and he also has beaten Conor McGregor. He's done all he needs to do in the sport. So if McGregor does stick around in MMA, who would you like to see him fight next, and who do you think he fights next, and when?
So honestly, who would I like to see him fight next? I'd probably like to see him, that's a tough one, against somebody like Dan Hooker or somebody like Tony Ferguson. Who do I think he will fight next? I think he's fighting Nate Diaz again.
Yeah.
100%. It's the Nate Diaz trilogy. It's the perfect timing for it. Like, your stock in Conor McGregor fighting right now is as low as it's going to be for a while.
Right.
Like, it is a low selling point right now for Conor McGregor. You can't, in good conscience, put him against a top two or three opponent. He was number four and he got knocked silly. So, like, all of the top contenders for the title, the Charles Oliveiras, the, you know, Justin Gaethje's, the, you know, Poirier trilogy, if you really want to even consider that fight, like, all of those fights are off the table. He doesn't want to fight somebody with a name like Dan Hooker coming off of a knockout. So what's left? What's left is go up to welterweight or fight Nate Diaz in the trilogy. And you know what? Nate Diaz in the trilogy fight is still going to sell like top ticket Conor McGregor, right? It's still going to sell as if it was a Conor McGregor card. Conor McGregor versus Dan Hooker in a 3-round co-main event? It's probably not going to do it. Can you headline a pay-per-view with those two right now? You could. It's maybe not the best idea. But, like, could you headline a pay-per-view with Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz for three? Yeah, absolutely.
No, that makes perfect sense. You could. And Diaz would give him the boost if his stock has dipped with the casual public, which is basically what you're who you're counting on to make these pay-per-views a success. You know the hardcore is going to buy it no matter what you have. You need the casual people, and you think the casual people if they hear he's on a card, maybe a few less of them are going to buy it. But then if you hear it's with another person who the casual people actually have heard of, like Diaz, then definitely that would bump it up. And like you said, you can headline a pay-per-view with that. You're not going to put him in a co-main event because he takes such a huge purse and such a huge cut of the pay-per-view revenue. There's a reason why cards with him on it are generally not very deep, because he eats up all the money. They don't want to have to pay other champions or big name people a cut of the pay-per-view revenue because Connor's already taken it. So if they put him and Diaz, both of them get a cut of the pay-per-view and then fill out the rest of the card, kind of like how they filled out last night's card with, you know, decent paid people, but people that aren't going to cut into their millions and millions of in pay-per-view money. That would make sense. So do you think it happens in 2021? McGregor says he wants to be active, but he said that last year also. There's still the looming pandemic, and the UFC's choice of president is out of office. The new one seems like he's going to be responsible and make people quarantine and all that. People coming into the country from outside the country, quarantine and whatnot, which would be something McGregor would have to do, coming in from Ireland or whatever far-flung tropical island his yacht is residing in. Do you think it happens this year? A long-winded question, but that's the question.
I think the question for me is not so much as does it work with Connor, because I do think maybe I'm dumb, but I actually believe that he wants to fight again this year. And I think you're seeing a lot of those, like I said, I do think that the door to a big money boxing match is sort of out the door with that TKO loss. So as a result, like, I actually think we're probably going to see him in MMA again this year. I think the bigger question comes down to, can they get an agreement with Diaz? Because I know they said that we got something worked out for Diaz. I'm sure you do. I'm sure something has been worked out for Diaz 8 billion times. But look, he's Nate Diaz. And it doesn't work out well when you're negotiating with the Diaz brother. So if they did actually already set a fight with Nate Diaz, I doubt you see him twice in a year. And if they're kind of close to a contract and just the opponent doesn't work out and now they can just switch it to Connor, maybe that's a little bit more likely. So I think it probably is less of a question to Connor. I think he wants to fight again. He was sort of getting that itch last year where, you know, you saw that DM he shared with Dana about saying he'd fight freaking Diego Sanchez. You know, so I think he wants back in, but I think the opponent is going to be the bigger problem.
If listeners notice there in Dan's answer, he said maybe I'm dumb, which is good. That's the first step. First step is admitting that you have a problem. So that's kind of a half. You're half pleading to ignorance, which is good. Maybe you're dumb. But yeah, I think the problem with negotiating Diaz into a McGregor fight is both guys think they're the A side. Diaz thinks he's the A side of this fight, so he wants the same level of money as McGregor or the same cut of the purse as McGregor, which can be difficult and heck, but both guys are unpredictable guys too. So, but that, you know, with our booking hats on, that would make the most sense. I was going to say, possibly Justin Gaethje, which would be a bad matchup for McGregor coming off a knockout, which maybe he realizes, but I thought, you know, that would be an exciting fight, and it kind of makes sense where both guys coming off a loss and both guys, you know, still near the top of the division, but McGregor probably is, or his people at least, are probably smart enough knowing that that's not stylistically, it's not the best fight to be going into after you got your bell rung.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that fight for him right now. I actually like the idea a lot,
right,
of Michael Chandler versus Justin Gaethje.
Yeah.
I think that one would make a lot more sense. And even though Gaethje's coming off the loss, like, basically the way you can look at lightweight losses is if it was to Khabib, you can just erase that from their record because it's not really coming off of a loss. Everybody's expected to lose to him. So, you know, like, I think him versus Michael Chandler for sort of You probably could give one of them a title shot off of a win. Although I guess Dana talking about giving Michael Chandler a title shot after beating Dan Hooker?
I didn't hear that, but that wouldn't surprise me. I would expect he would, or suspect he would be at least in the running. Maybe that's actually enough talking about the loser side of the top of the card this past week, and we should talk about what happens next with the winners. Before we move into that, let me tell you about another one of our lovely sponsors that are helping bring this podcast to your ears. Better Edge. Better Edge is a stock exchange for sports bets, allowing you to buy and sell betting positions like stock market. Best part is it allows you to bet with no vig. Since you're buying positions from other sports bettors, there's no house. You can play for money in 40 states in the U.S. Plus, a new feature they have, they're going to be doing a weekly college basketball contest on Wednesdays and Saturdays. $10 to enter, and each user will start with a balance of 1,000 Edge coins to wager on the games. The player with the highest earnings will take the entire pool of entry fees. So that could be a nice chunk of change for you. It's a battle royal, winner take all. Find the link under the competitions tab on their website. So sign up today at Better Edge, that's BETTOR Edge, and use promo code SGP for a free $10 bet. So it's BETTOR Edge.com, promo code SGP. And make sure you steer clear of following our advice on this show. Bet with your head, not with your ears. All right. So the winner's side, you were saying you would like, who should get the next title shot? Off the top of my head, I was thinking Chandler would be in the mix, but I, like a lot of people, and maybe even like Dana White, I was overlooking Charles Oliveira. If we're basing this on merit, what should really, or what I would like to happen is Habib relinquishes the belt, which seems like he was willing to do weeks ago. And he told
Months ago.
months ago, and he told Dana White just as much. Habib is not the one holding up the division. In case anyone wonders, it is the boss who's holding up the division. So I want the belt vacated, and I want Poirier and Do Bronx to fight for the vacant belt.
You nailed it. That's it. And to me, that's the only option. And not that Michael Chandler's win isn't good, but I mean, rate Michael Chandler's, quick KO or half a round KO here against Dan Hooker versus 3 rounds of pure dominance of Charles Oliveira against Tony Ferguson,
Right.
right? Which of those do you rate as a better win right now? And yeah, Chandler's is the flashier, prettier thing that happened, and it's the more recent one that happened. But
That's
like,
the
you
problem.
can't tell, yeah, and that's the problem, right? Like the recency bias of all of it. But you can't tell me that after watching those two fights, you feel convinced that Michael Chandler is a better fighter than Charles Oliveira. In fact, I think the opposite. It gives me more confidence that Oliveira is better than Chandler. Because he just looked so good for so long in that fight, and he continued to dominate Tony Ferguson at Tony Ferguson's game. So, yeah, I think Poirier versus Oliveira is the right pick. And I think, like I said before, Gaethje versus Chandler would be a fun number one contender fight.
Right.
Because Gaethje's coming off that loss to Habib, which, like I said, I don't even really count as losses. We just expunge all of the Habib losses from people's records because they're expected to lose to him. So, yeah, those two have fun styles that would be interesting to see together. And if Chandler could get through Gaethje, then obviously he would be in a good place to fight either Poirier or Du Bronx. But yeah, I just don't see a reason to jump the queue here with Chandler. At least not yet. Not with just a win over, and not that Dan Hooker's a bad win. Dan Hooker's a great win to have on your record. But just a win over Dan Hooker, I'm not sure that does it for me.
And if you are questioning a win over Tony Ferguson because he looks shot, fine. Olivier's got 8 straight wins, 9 of 10, nine of 10, 9 and 1 in this past 10, 7 performance of the night bonuses. So that
Yeah,
sounds like it.
and
Sounds
submissions
like a
goes
headliner.
out the wazoo, right?
Yes.
I mean, that, and that's the really exciting piece to it too, is that a lot of these guys at the top of this division have kind of like, you know, they're different styles, but have like interesting striking styles, right? Like Gaethje's a brawler and Connor's the counter puncher and Poirier hits you with volume and Hooker's got knees in there too, but like ultimately guys who we think of who strike. And Chandler's a little different. He's got a wrestling background, but like look at his recent wins. His last three wins are knockouts on the feet. So like he's fits into that like fun striker realm. Then you had Khabib, who ran over all of them with grappling, and you just so happen to have this one other guy who also has great grappling skills, and for some reason we're overlooking that, like, maybe that's the weakness that beats all of these great strikers.
So assuming everyone heads into the fight healthy and proper weight cut and everything, I see Poirier beating either Chandler or Dobronx. I don't see him losing to either guy.
Yeah, I you know, and in obviously we both picked against him recently, but it almost seems like to me the big difference maker here, and I don't want to take anything away from Dustin Poirier because obviously he's got amazing skills. The big difference maker to me almost seems like Mike Brown.
Right.
You know, and I don't want to, you know, you can only say how much every coach has influence on him. But like Dustin Poirier follows a game plan to a T. You know, you mentioned before he leaned on Connor, tired him out. He kicked his leg, made him stationary. And then once he was stationary and tired out, then he went for the kill. Like that is clearly how the guys at American Top Team drew it up. That's how Mike Brown drew it up. And Dustin Poirier knows how to follow the game plan and knows how to adapt the game plan. And, like, not that, you know, Michael Chandler might not or Dubronx might not, but, like, you know, I just don't know that, like, they would be able to solve his problem of coming in with the perfect game plan. And that maybe is the difference maker for me. And I do think he's better than both of them in many aspects. But, like, what does Oliveira have for him if he can't get him down? You know, like I don't like that fight on the feet for Oliveira one bit.
And I think a lot of it you can put on Mike Brown's shoulders, not just because I'm a WEC mark from way back and WEC never died, but I know Poirier has matured also, so it's not just coaching, but he was not always a guy who would follow. If I remember correctly, my memory tends to get wonky sometimes, but he was not always a guy who would follow the game plan earlier on in his career, and he would be a guy you could get into a slugfest, and he's not that guy now.
Yeah, I mean, although it's worth mentioning, he's been in slugfests before. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you could probably say the Dan Hooker fight was that. The Max Holloway fight was definitely that. But also, like, I think in both of those instances, that was the game plan, right? Like, in maybe that's not a bad game plan against Max Holloway, when you know that A, you can match his volume, and B, you can match his power, which, by the way, in retrospect, how amazing of a win is that for Dustin Poirier? Like, this dude, if he is not the next title challenger after having beaten Max Holloway, Dan Hooker, and Conor McGregor back to back to back, and you can throw Eddie Alvarez, Justin Gaethje, and Anthony Pettis in that run too, which is a freaking insane run with, you know, just that one Khabib hiccup in there. But yeah, like I think maybe those were the game plans in those slugfests too. So, you know, you're right. Maybe he's matured a little bit, but also like the game plan, and that's the most impressive thing. He adapts the game plan to the opponent, which makes him even more dangerous.
And if there was no Khabib or Poirier, these were title fights, and Poirier had the belt during that run, you would be saying he's one of the all-time greats in an all-time deep division.
Yeah, and 100%. If you pulled that Khabib fight and you just looked at that recent run, like since his last loss before that, which was a weird KO to Michael Johnson almost 5 years ago now, it was Jim Miller, Eddie Alvarez, Anthony Pettis, Justin Gaethje, Max Holloway, Dan Hooker, Conor McGregor. Like Jesus, what a run that would have been. And like you said, we're talking about him in the same sentence. It is, you know, all of the other greats. We're talking about him being the best lightweight of all time instead of BJ Penn, or, you know, we're talking about him in the same kind of breath as we are, you know, other all-time greats, maybe not GSP great, but like We're talking about him on getting close to that run, at least.
And staying, let alone waiting, but he stayed, just staying awake, fighting some of those heavy hitters is an accomplishment. He didn't get knocked out by any of those guys, and you just read a murderer's row of sluggers or precision punchers like Max Holloway.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's the craziest thing, is that, like, and it's not like he's never been knocked out before either, right? Like, Michael Johnson knocked him out, as I mentioned before. But, like, he went in there with all of those guys, stood toe-to-toe with some of them, you know, knocked others out real quick, you know, because that Connor win is probably considered a quick one. It's impressive, not just in name value alone, but in performance as well.
All right, so it's settled, Dustin Poirier. We've decided you're one of the all-time greats. So there you go. We've touched on it briefly, but the co-main event, Michael Chandler, Dan Hooker. When I saw them in the cage, I thought, oh, well, we were right on this one. Hooker's going to win. Hooker, so much bigger than him, lengthwise, so much bigger than Chandler. Doesn't I know he's super thick, but he does not look like a lightweight in height or length, especially against Hooker. Hooker was keeping them on the outside, so he wasn't grappling them, and Hooker had the reach advantage. I thought, hey, this is gonna go our way, and boy, it didn't go our way at all.
Yeah, it was one of those ones too where, like, it, and you said it about Connor, it, like, looked like he was gonna win the fight until he didn't. Not that Chandler was getting, you know, tacked or he wasn't, like, looking out like a fish out of water.
No, not at all.
But, like, he, like you said, he was on the outside, which gives you cause for concern for a guy who has a wrestling base and might need to use it, and a guy who does better when he's pressuring his opponent. And you're like, man, Hooker's doing a good job of making sure that doesn't happen. And then he didn't one time. And that's all it took against Michael Chandler, which, I mean, like, good for Michael Chandler, and it certainly shows the power he's got in those hands still at his, you know, he's been in some wars too. It's worth mentioning that, like, obviously he's got some miles on the tank too. Those fights with, you know, Eddie Alvarez obviously are ones that took some out of him. But that being said, yeah, like, he's definitely intriguing in the division, and I didn't mean to, like, write off, you know, his run, but I still think I want to see more than, you know, 2.5 minutes of him before I'm ready to put him in a title shot over Charles Oliveira.
Right. Things to note, he is 34, and he has, like Dan said, he has been in a lot of battles, and he has been knocked out, so they may want to, we're not advocating for him, like, it matters what we think anyhow, but we're not advocating for him to get in a title fight, but they may want to maximize their investment in here, in him here. They may want to fast track him towards top, which they already have, putting him on this card against Hooker. So have him fight another top guy next. And if he wins that fight, then definitely you can see him being next in line for a title fight. And that probably would make sense, because you don't want to wait too much longer on a guy with some wear and tear on him and at the age he's at. And Hooker,
What would you think of a fight with him and Gaethje if that did go? Who would you take in that?
Gaethje, I think I would take. Even though, like, we talk about how great Gaethje's wrestling is, and we just haven't seen it yet, but sure didn't. I know it was against Khabib, but a lot of people have done a lot better wrestling against Khabib than he has.
The thing I will say about that, though, is I would say his wrestling didn't look as bad as his, like, he looked like he had never taken a jiu-jitsu class when
yeah,
he
was that. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I misspoke. His grappling didn't look good. His wrestling, yeah, that's, sorry. Yeah.
But then again, you know, like, Michael Chandler didn't use his wrestling last night. So nope. If it's a striking match, yeah, I think I favor Gaethje. But
yeah,
it would be interesting for sure.
No, yeah, I can see. And then regardless of who wins that, then you're not gonna complain about assuming Poirier wins. You're not gonna Chucky wins, you're not going to complain about either of those guys fighting for the title. If Poirier against either Chandler or the rematch against Mr. Gaethje, you're not going to complain about either of those. So, and as for Dan Hooker, it's now the big thing with him is he's, you know, you can't finish him. You know, he's a monster. He a zombie, actually, is probably the better term. He the New Zealand zombie. He can't he can't be finished, and he got finished very quick here. It's just a matter of him, too much too fast for him. Like, he got put to the top, thrown to the wolves, so to speak, too quickly, because he's still a fairly young guy. He he's going to be turned 31 in a few weeks, so he's still fairly young. But yeah, he's lost a Poirier and Chandler now, back-to-back fights.
Yeah, I don't know that he's out of his element. I think it's just where he fits in this division, right? Like, he's probably the number 5 or number 6 best guy in the division.
Yeah,
like, he lost to probably the number 1 and number 5 guys in the division right now. Like, and that's just, you know, sort of where he fits. And, I mean, he did beat Paul Felder last year. So, like, there's obviously that. And Felder's a top 10 guy. So, I think maybe it's not so much of being pushed too fast or, you know, too far, but just, like, that's where he's going to fit. And you could put him in – I mean, there are tons of fun fights still there for him. There's – you know, he could fight Tony Ferguson still. Like I said, him versus Connor makes sense if we weren't talking about name value and having to sell fights and all that just from, like, a competitive standpoint. But also there's, like, names in that division. Like, I know nobody is talking about Carlos Diego Fajeda, but the man's on, like, a 6-fight win streak or something like that and is coming off of submitting Anthony Pettis. Like, maybe it's time for somebody like him, and I know he's got a fight with Beneil Dariush coming up, but, like, maybe it's time for somebody like him to fight Dan Hooker should he get through Beneil Dariush.
Right, and Hooker, especially if they can start traveling again, if they can host fights in Oceania area, he's a guy, I think he's the perfect guy you can headline fight night cards with. You know, I think he's a big enough name, like I said, especially if you're in his area of the world, but he's a perfect guy you could put up against either an up-and-comer or another veteran-type guy that and you could put him as a headliner, and they're not going to disappoint.
Yeah, that's what him and Felder did, right? Like,
right,
him,
yeah.
Was that one in Auckland, too? Like,
I think so.
Auckland, and it was, like, the last one before we had to shut down. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that would be a perfect spot for him to continue being a name that everybody knows. Everybody knows guarantees violence. You can stick him on ESPN or ABC. It doesn't matter, and it's going to deliver.
Yep. Assuming his fearsome chin isn't broken now, then there's still, you know, still a future for this guy in the sport. Women's flyweight bout. I thought we were going to get it wrong because I saw, like, I like to watch the traffic on MMA-Manifesto on the big fight nights. I like to watch the trick ebb and flow. So I watch, like, the live stats, and I saw Jessica Eyes was, like, she was soaring her views on my site over Calderwood. So I thought, oh, before I watched the fight, I thought, oh man, we're going to lose this one. But JoJo pulled it out.
Yeah. And I would say too, she looked good doing it. No, I was
sure
impressed
because
in, you know, not to, you know, again, discount another one of my picks and make myself look dumb. But, like, I did pick her to win, but I expected to see more wrestling out of her and more clinch work. And really, she did a lot on the feet, sort of going back to her roots and deciding not to match wrestling with Jessica Eye, which maybe is smarter. You know, I thought she held a sneaky wrestling advantage there against Eye, but she must have liked the way it looked on the feet. And, I mean, obviously, it was right. Like, she won, you know, every single round, in my opinion. I know one judge somehow found a way to give Jessica Eye a round in there. I don't know what freaking round he was watching because every single one of those was Calderwood. But, yeah, she looked good. And you know, I'm glad to see it, too, because, you know, given, you know, she was in a title fight, right? Like, that never happened. And then she almost gave it away to somebody who was, you know, maybe one of the least deserving title challengers of all time. And, yeah, I'd love to see her work her way back to that. And, I mean, a win over Jessica Eye is certainly the right first step.
Yeah, so for listeners who don't know, Calderwood was penciled in for a title fight against Valentina Shevchenko. Then she, for some reason, decided to take a short notice fight against Jennifer Maya, lost that. Maya went on to take her title challenge and fought Shevchenko and got destroyed. So I suspect the same thing is going to happen to Calderwood, but I think everyone in that division is going to get destroyed by Shevchenko at this point anyhow. So at least until some of the younger fighters make a name for themselves. The one fight we differed on, all our picks were the same. So we both sucked equally. It was my fault for following along with you this week, I think. The one I did best you on was Makhmud Muradov destroyed Andrew Sanchez on the feet with flying knee and punches in the third round. Scrap between these two guys.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I would say I expected Andrew Sanchez to look a little bit better grappling-wise than he did, because he looked really bad at any attempt at a takedown. And I know they only have him down as attempting two takedowns, but like, I think that's because some of his entries were so far away that they were like, do we even count that? So like, my big problem there was just overrating what his grappling can look like, because it was not good.
No. Maybe we should talk about the elephant in the room, Herb Dean, in the next fight, women's strawweight fight. Marina Rodriguez TKO'd Amanda Ribas. She knocked her out twice, actually, because she had her beat, as he's been known to do over the past, at least a year, maybe 2 years. Former gold standard ref Herb Dean rushed in to stop the fight, and then he basically brushed against Rodriguez, so she thought it was over. So she did the gentlemanly thing and walked away, but he decided no, the fight's not over, let's let Ribas get beat up some more. So Ribas got to her feet and got knocked out once again.
I would say the most egregious thing he did too was, so if he did run in there, first of all, she was out. Like, mm-hmm. that was the right time to call the fight, first of all.
Well, she bent in half.
Yeah.
even before the follow-up shots, she was bent in half.
Yeah, and so what I would say is that first of all was the right time to call it. But second of all, after you don't call it, Rodriguez walks away and Ribas does this like weird stumble to her feet, because she got to her feet, but she didn't look good on her feet. Like, he should have just been like, oh, I fucked up, this is where I'm calling it, right? Like, he should have taken one look at her getting back to her feet and been like, oh, no, I was right the first time, and called it there. And instead, he shrugged his shoulders and made her eat three more punches. Yeah, and, like, you can only blame a referee so much, because that's a high-pressure, high-intensity situation. There's no winning, right? Because, like, if he calls it early, people are planning about him calling it early. If he calls it late, people are like, oh, fighter's safety and stuff like that. People are going to complain no matter what if there's any question. But, like, to me, you got to at least see when she gets back to her feet, she ain't there. And she knew she wasn't there. She even looked at him, was like, isn't it over? And you're like, yeah, it is over, Amanda, but I'm going to let you get hit again.
it was like a total heat, shrugging his shoulder, saying, what do you mean? The fight's not over. What are you talking about? I rushed in to stop it, but it's not over. And obviously, it's a high-pressure job, and he was one of the best for a long time, but you don't see this happening with all the, I know it's a tough job, but you don't see it happening with the other top refs. Like, it happens with him pretty much every card he's on, at least one fight, there's something, maybe it's because we're looking for it, but there's something wonky going on. Either he's usually involving him letting a fighter get beat up too much. He's almost like, you see this with fighters when they're shot, they know what they're supposed to do, but they can't pull the trigger. And it seems to be that way with him.
Yeah, and it's different than – because every ref has a couple of these too, I think, if you go back and look. It's different than the problem people were having last year with Chris Tione. I don't know if you remember those. He let, like, four fights go too long, and then, like, people won in, like, comeback fashion, like, crazy comeback fashion. And, like, it isn't even like those, because at least in those, Tione wasn't – he wasn't even thinking about stopping him, right? Like, Tione was just like – oh, no, this is fine, he's all right. And he wasn't, and, like, he probably should have stopped it. But, like, ultimately, he was just, like, hands off. This is bad because, like, Herb runs in and then second-guesses himself. And I feel like, you know, and again, props to him for doing the job for as long as he has and as well as he has. And, like, you know, I obviously don't have too much of a leg to stand on here. But, like, it's really not a position where you should be second-guessing yourself. Like, you need to have conviction when it's literally your job to stop somebody from taking damage in a fist fight.
Right. No, he seems like a great guy, a knowledgeable guy. He's been basically the face of reffing in the sport for years. But, you know, there's sometimes things pass you by. Hey, I can't dunk. I used to be able to dunk. I can't dunk anymore. sometimes you got to realize when it passes you by. And it seems athletic commissions seem to be a lot like Dana White when things like this come to light, they seem to dig their heels in and fight back and say, no, and continue to use a guy like him or refuse to even review things like this, it seems.
Yeah, and they never, like when one of these mistakes costs somebody a fight, it's not like the commission's ever coming in and overturn it. I mean, like we had that Mike Rodriguez, who beat Mike Rodriguez?
Yeah,
Ed
I
Herman
won
where he kneed him in the sternum.
Right, yes.
And they called it a nut shot, and then Herman comes back to win by submission, and the commission just like shrugged their shoulders and was like, nah, we're not going to overturn that. Good job, ref. So yeah, like you're right. The commissions are totally not the right people to get him out of there. I mean, unless he starts doing Mario Yamasaki stuff and letting people. What was it? Mario Yamasaki that I'm thinking of? Steve Mazzagatti.
Steve Mazzagatti is
Steve Mazzagatti.
Dana White ran him out of the sport. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
was he the one who said he wanted the somebody to be a warrior? Like he wanted to see the warrior speed.
That sounds familiar. Yeah. Yeah. But Yamasaki.
I think it was somebody Valentina Shevchenko beat the hell out of. But
yes.
I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, it was that. Yeah, it was the girl that got put in short notice. I can't remember what her name is, but yes, there was a girl who got put in short notice.
Priscilla Cachuera?
Yes, that's what it was. Yes. Yep.
She wanted to see her warrior spirit or some shit.
It looks like Dana White got him out. I think he got Yamasaki out too by complaining enough about him, but I haven't heard a peep about Herb Dean yet, which unfortunately, but like I said, he's a nice guy. He seems like a nice guy. I've never met him, obviously, but I'm not advocating for someone to lose their job, but I don't want someone to lose their life either in the sport. So any other fights you wanted to touch on the card, or you want to put this another horrible performance by us to bed at this point?
I'm going to just go on there and say two that I got wrong that are really interesting to me in the long run is the Juliana Pena win over Sarah McMahon. Just really impressive how good her grappling looked, because, you know, my breakdown of that was I think she's a grappler and just couldn't out grapple an Olympic wrestler. And hell, she did exactly that. So props to her there, including landing a late takedown. So she looks like she's back in a good position, although maybe not ready for the Amanda Nunes fight she called for. Nobody is,
right.
But like you also can't get submitted by a Dutch kickboxer who's the number one contender and then beat the number 10 contender and be like, well, I'm clearly one now.
Yeah.
That's not how that works. And then the other one I will just say is I was so bummed out. And I don't want to end on a sad note here, but I was so bummed out at how Khalil Roundtree looked
against
Marcin Procneo. Like, dude, you are literally in there with a dude who's been knocked out three times in the first round, and you just never put your foot on the gas. You never go get him. You stumble him in the second round, and then you're like, eh, whatever, I'll get him later. And then throw, like, 12 punches in the third round. Like, I don't know what was happening out there, but it was wildly disappointing.
Didn't he stumble him in the first round too with multiple shots, I thought, or maybe that was the second round.
He really, really stunned him. Right?
Yeah.
Like he was like jelly legged him. He jelly legged him in the second, but like in the first, I think he tagged him.
Yeah.
And he looked hurt. But I even think the announcer said, like, I don't even know if Roundtree knows how hurt he has him.
Yeah.
And then in the second round, there was no doubting. He knew. He had to have known. Like, Procneo couldn't stand barely. And he just kind of, like, walked him down and then kind of threw what he had been throwing all fight, which was not much and not particularly, you know, like, I mean, they were throwing hard. Like, everybody tweeting on the freaking screen about how hard they were throwing. But, like, it wasn't... There wasn't, like, naked aggression there, which is maybe what I wanted to see when you have somebody hurt that much.
Yeah, something seems to have happened to him mentally. He looked so sharp after he moved his training to Thailand, to Tiger Muay Thai, and then lost a fight, lost his last fight before this one, and then, like, said he was retired or going to retire out of the blue. Just signed a contract extension, so he re-upped with the UFC, and then he didn't look like he wanted to fight last night, because there was, you know, Procneo was right for the picking, and it was very, like, he was basically setting himself up to get knocked out if Roundtree put his foot on the gas, like you said. He saw what he was supposed to do, it seemed, because he was hitting him when he was leaving himself wide open, but he was not going to finish the fight for some reason.
Yeah, so not to end on a really sad and depressing note, but man, was that depressing and sad.
Sure was. All right, I was thinking maybe we'll move on to give everyone a quick overview of what's coming down the pipe, because there's some big I know it's been a long podcast, but there's some bigs coming down the pipe. Something we haven't talked about yet. So I thought, with no UFC coming up this week, that we give you a quick breakdown of that. Before that, let's tell you about our last sponsor here, Ace Per Head. Have you ever thought of starting your own sports book but don't know how? Ace Per Head is here to help you start. They'll provide you with an all-inclusive professional betting site with all the lines updated up to the second and wagers graded immediately. They have top-notch customer support going 24/7 and some of the sharpest lines in the industry. Plus, Ace Per Head offers live betting and an amazing mobile experience. So get started today, and they can offer you up to 6 weeks free. Go to aceperhead.com/SGP, aceperhead.com/SGP. All right, like I said, we've gone on long enough. Maybe I just thought we'd briefly touch on some of the big fights coming up, pay-per-view-wise at least. So UFC 258 has been confirmed. It will be Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns for the welterweight belt. I think when we went, broke down this fight before, we both picked Usman, but like you said a few minutes ago, you think Burns is a worthy challenger for this title?
Yeah, I actually think, so I'm not positive that I'm picking Usman on that. Okay. You know, the more I think about it, I do really like Burns. And I think just my problem here is that I think Burns is the best possible contender for that title. Like, right. I think he's the most dangerous person to Usman based on his mixture of grappling and striking. You know, Colby Covington wrestled with him and was right side by side with him, and that made it a fun fight. But ultimately, the difference maker there is Colby Covington can throw 300 punches on his feet, but ain't a single one of them going to stun you. Like, you know, how many times did he hit fucking Robbie Lawler? Like, it seemed like he couldn't hit Robbie Lawler enough, and Robbie Lawler never looked woozy. So that's the difference maker, is that Gilbert Burns can turn your lights off. So I think that's – I'm probably going Usman on that, but Burns is definitely an exciting challenger.
Yeah, Burns has got, for the record, 6 knockouts, 8 submissions. So you think of him as a submission guy, but he's got almost as many knockouts. His last real knockout was way back in 2018, though, because Dan Moret, who's most people will say who about that guy, he TKO'd Damian Maia, which isn't a huge feat either. But the line right now looks like you can get Usman's right around the minus 240, 250 range. Burns about two, looks like most play 7, but one plus 190, plus 200. That sounds about right to me. Do you agree with the lines there?
Yeah, it sounds about right to me. I might have it a little closer. Like I said, I've got Burns as being one of the best challengers. So I would think, you know, high 100s for Usman rather than mid 200s. But yeah, I mean, like it's not a surprising line to me, and it's not a preposterous line to me, but I definitely see more value on Burns there than I do on Usman.
Right. So that'll take place February 13th at the UFC Apex back in Vegas. And then the big card is UFC 259, March the 6th, will be taking place at TBD. It has got 3 title fights on the card. Light heavyweight title fight, Jan Błachowicz will defend against middleweight champ Israel Adesanya. Let me see the lines for that. We already broke down that fight, I think, briefly. Starting of the year or end of last year, Adesanya is right around 260, minus 260, minus 270. Błachowicz is around plus 210, 220. Actually, maybe those lines are probably a little bit closer than I would expect. I would think Adesanya could be even bigger. Maybe he will be once we get closer to fight night.
Yeah, I think that's probably right around where I would see him. Like, I wouldn't see him as some sort of, like, massive surefire. Like, I expect him to win. But, yeah. But Błachowicz's thing has kind of always been, too, that he's got the big hands and he's just got a touch of one. So, like,
it's true.
You know, do you give him a 1-in-3 puncher's chance? Probably. Yeah.
Probably no, that's true.
1-in-3 shot.
Yeah, and plus, that's a good point. Plus, Adesanya is coming up in weight. That can't be overlooked either. And then we got a women's featherweight belt, which we talked about already, Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson. That won't be close. Nunes, the best line you can get for her right now is minus 1,000. I see her as high as minus 1,250. Megan Anderson, if for some reason you like her, like I said, a good person, good fighter. But if you like her to win this fight, you can get her at plus 700, plus 600.
If you like her to win this fight, if you're really thinking of betting on Megan Anderson too, the thing I would tell you the most is wait as close until that fight is actually happening to bet it.
Because
those lines are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And when you think that, well, nobody's going to bet on Amanda Nunes at negative 1,500, you're going to see some big fat bets come in on her at negative 1,500. And that number is going to creep larger and larger and larger. You're going to be getting 10 or 11 to 1 by the time that fight rolls around if you do like the idea of betting on Megan Anderson.
Well, Dan just tipped you off there. If you can read between the lines that he's going to be making one of his five-figure bets, at least five-figure bets on Amanda Nunes come fight night. So,
All those bets that you see in the corner, they're exactly, all me, by the way. Dan. Just
podcasting brings in lots of money, let me tell you. MMA podcasting, and your name's not Joe Rogan, it brings in lots of money. And then there's another title fight, as if that's not enough. So this is like I was saying, which is one of the positives of having Conor McGregor, a non-champion that you can headline cards with, and you don't have to build anything else on the undercard to make it feel like a big fight night. One of the benefits of that is you can stack fight nights like this one with three title fights. So bantamweight title fight final. This one's been rumored for a while. Petr Yan, new champ, first fight title defense against the funky man Aljamain Sterling. This is a much closer one on the books at least. Yan's right around minus 130. Sterling's around plus 110 or so. I think those numbers are probably about right in my eyes, first glance.
Yeah, I would actually say, and I'm leaning Sterling on that one too, which will get to a full reason why. But yeah, the big reason for me on Petr Yan and not being like sold on him yet, is like the strength of schedule just isn't there.
No,
right? He's got a win over Uriah Faber. He's got a win over Jose Aldo. Both within the last year, those two names don't mean the same thing in 2019 and 2020 as they used to. And, went the distance with John Dodson, went the distance with Jinsu Sun, not for anything, but those are names that you should, maybe not be putting away, but if you're a dominant champ, it should look dominant against Jinsu Sun, or it should look dominant against, and it was dominant and one-sided against Johnson, but whereas meanwhile you have Aljo going in there and backpacking Corey Sandhagen in no time at all and choking him out, that's a way more impressive than any of Jan's to me. So and there are other reasons too, but like I said, we'll get to that when March 6th rolls around.
Yeah.
We can pray that coronavirus doesn't tear that card apart.
Yeah, because listen, and that's the top of the card, obviously, three title fights. And you also have Alexander Rakic versus Thiago Santos, which basically is a headliner on any other fight night. You got Joseph Benavidez versus Askar Askarov. You got Dominic Cruz coming back again against Casey Kenney. You got Islam Makhachev.
Sonya Dong versus Tyler Phillips is a banger.
Islam Makhachev's on the card. Jake Matthews. This is Kai Kara France. This is a very, very good. This is probably, obviously, I don't have a crystal ball or I would be making proper picks, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say this on paper, this may be, and at the end of the year, this might be the best talent wise on paper, the best card they're going to put on all year.
If it holds up, it for sure is.
Yeah. And then if that's not enough for you, March, March Madness in the MMA world, 3 weeks later, March 27th, UFC 260, Miocic versus Ngannou 2. So Stipe Miocic is finally coming back to defend his heavyweight belt against Francis Ngannou. I don't think we ever broke this one down. Have you seen the lines, or do you want to take a guess at where the lines are?
I actually I have not seen the lines, and I'm going to surprisingly say that I think Ngannou is a favorite.
Correct.
Based on the fact that when we talked about the champ at the end of the year bets like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think Ngannou was the favorite there too, and I was like, what the hell? And not that I don't think there's a decent chance that he does, but I wouldn't expect him to be the favorite. So if he is the favorite, it's probably slight, -140.
He's -156 is the loss I've seen him. So he's -160 in most books, it looks like. Miocic can get you a +130, +140. So
Kind of surprising for a guy who already has a win over the other.
Yeah, and he's been, I know he lost briefly to the belt to Cormier, but he's been the champ for a long time also. So it's not like this is a flash in the pan type of guy. So that should be an interesting fight, to say the least. And then if that's not enough, they got another title fight on that card. Featherweight, Alexander Volkanovski's first, actually second title defense. He beat Max Holloway the second time also. He will be fighting former challenger Brian Ortega. Do you know what the line is on this, or you want to guess on this too?
I'm going to say probably favorite for the champ, probably high 100s, negative 175.
Yeah, you're right in there. Minus 181 is the lowest I see it, plus 227 is the highest. So he's right around like where you said. Nice job. So Ortega will get you plus 140 up to plus 180. So that should be an interesting fight also. So that's, I don't think they've announced anything for 261 yet, but that's almost all the champs are tied up as it is in the next couple months. So we have a fun few months coming our way. We'll be back next week. We've got UFC Fight Night, Overeem versus some Volkov. Guy. Volkov, right? Yes, but we broke down that fight before, or briefly broke it down. So a couple big guys, veterans, that should be a fun one. That's February 6th. And then we got the pay-per-view after that. UFC 258 will be the week after that. Next week's card's not super stacked. Looking over it quickly. We got, obviously, over Luke, like I said, trying to see what the next best fight is. I think Frankie Edgar, Corey Sandhagen's probably the next, or probably going to be the co-main event. Not a super stacked card, but there are some interesting fights now to look at it. And it doesn't really matter how stacked the card is. You can make money off it regardless. So you can probably make more money off cards that aren't stacked because people aren't going to be betting on it. And the lines you could take advantage of some lines there. So I think that's probably all we got. So do you have anything else to tell the people this week, Dan, other than to apologize for your bad picks?
No, I apologize for my bad picks. Right, and make sure to catch out all of my stuff. You can follow me on Twitter at Gumby Rewind.
There you go. And you can follow me at Jeff Fox Writer. Make sure you read my stuff at sportsgamblingpodcast.com and read Dan and my stuff at MMA-manifesto.com. And till next time, we will, hopefully you don't catch any bad beats between now and next week. And then we'll feature a whole bunch of bad beats for Overeem versus Volkov. I promise. So we'll talk to you then.